Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This podcast is presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Ed Morse is your only Cadillac dealer of the year in Broward and Dade County. This is the Alex Dotto Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes! Oh, it is.
It is.
The 7 o'clock hour of the Alex Dotto Show. We're here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Streaming online at WQAM.com or on your smartphone, TuneIn Radio app, radio.com app, however you listen. We appreciate your patronage here tonight. If you'd like to get in, share your wisdom with us via the phone lines. I think we have one line open. We'll go through some calls here in a second. Get through a lot of calls now because we're going to talk Heat with Ira Winderman at 7:25 tonight. If you'd like to get in, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560, or you can always text us on the plumbers911.com text line, but please don't text and drive. Reach us there at 56022. Hurricanes will be wearing the traditional orange tops on white pants on Saturday. I know that because that's the gear that the equipment room gave me yesterday when I got my gear for Saturday. And Casey Jones, by the way, is going to join us also in the 8 o'clock hour. It was a bet that I lost with Casey. That's the reason why I'm suiting up in full uniform on Saturday. I've got the jersey, authentic. I've got the shoulder pads. I've got the helmet. I've got the skin-tight game pants, which nobody wants to see. I apologize in advance. I've got cleats that I'm going to wear. I've got a helmet. I've got the face mask. I've got the chin strap, everything. And I'm pretty sure the equipment staff purposely gave me everything a size too small to add to my humiliation. But if you want to see, I took a very flattering selfie, you know, from the chest up yesterday, making my best intimidating war face in the jersey and the helmet. So if you want to check that out, go to my Twitter account at Alex Dotto. Dotto is spelled D-O-N-N-O. You know, I got a tweet from Crowder. I thought this was a compliment when he tweeted it. I was very upset to find out that he was actually making fun of me. Did that ever happen to you when you were growing up? That you, like, you think you're one of the cool kids? Like, you think that that they're really happy to be hanging around you, and then they realize they're just making fun of you? It never happened to me until yesterday when Channing Crowder sent this tweet out. So I tweeted, like, I honestly, like, I look at this. Like, I'm sure, like, Brian Kelly has probably blocked me on Twitter because he doesn't want his players to see how intimidating I look, because Notre Dame knows I will be haunting their nightmares. I am Miami's Freddy Krueger. I will be haunting their nightmares for the next 48 hours. Brian Kelly does not want his team to see this kind of a distraction. But I tweeted this photo out looking as intimidating as possible in the jersey, the shoulder pads, the helmet on. You know, I've got a really scary-looking beard that, like, you should keep people away from. And, you know, the caption that I put for the picture was, "Put me in, coach. Put me in, coach." That was my caption. To which Channing Crowder responds on Twitter, "Take me out first, coach. Dotto's body type and speed is a liability for sure." See, I thought he was sending me a compliment from the perspective of an opposing player. Like, I in my head, I'm picturing I'm lined up for the U. Like, I'm playing fullback, and Channing Crowder is suited up at linebacker for the Florida Gators, and he gets one look at me. He knows I seek contact. Channing Crowder knows I am a heat-seeking missile on that field. As soon as you put the ball in my hands, you think I'm running away from Channing Crowder? I'm running to the sideline? I'm seeking that contact. I'm running right into that guy. I thought that tweet was a compliment based on how intimidating he was. But he told me today, no, he's saying that if he's on my team, you better take him out before you put me on the field. I was very saddened and quite frankly insulted when he told me he was not giving me a compliment. Take me out first, coach, he says. Dono's body type and speed is a liability for sure. I may not be the fastest, but I play with more heart than at least 1% of Miami's players. I am not a liability, sir. I am a strength. Let's get that straight. Let's talk to RW in Miramar. What's up, RW?
Hey, guys. I mean, great show, man. You got some good callers, too. I've been following this program because I was a part of it at one time many, many years ago. And I've been following the program now for over 36 years. And I tell you, the last week, that game reminded me so much of what the Orange Bowl used to be like.
It did.
During the day. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. And I know for a fact that this week it's going to be even more electric than it was last week. And concerning guys like Paul Feinbaum, and here's a guy. This guy could be, to me, reminds me of Barney Fife's brother or something. and he's about as dumb as Barney Fife as well. These kind of people here actually stir up the U Nation. And I'm kind of glad that they don't give us the respect like Wisconsin. We're all undefeated, but I kind of like that dissing. Because it puts us in the mindset of us against the world.
Right. It's a great point, RW, because I like it for that reason. It's like I think a lot of Miami fans don't realize they like it because they use it. It creates a chip on the shoulder. It creates, an inferiority complex, whatever you want to call it.
I love it.
It riles us up.
Matter of fact, I don't want them to put us in the conversation, even if we beat Notre Dame. I don't want to be talked about in the conversation of the playoffs. Because I want to have that attitude, that chip on the shoulder type of approach.
Right, and plus, even if you beat Notre Dame, you still have to get through Clemson. You've still got to win the ACC before you can talk playoffs.
So let them talk. All these prognosticators, let them talk. Now, one of the things I think that these people are jealous of is the fact that when you go to a Miami game, and when our fans are into it, and we're into the program the way we were last week, and the kind of the enthusiasm that Mark Richt has brought back to the community, because for us, it's a community thing. When you go to the game, and I'm going to tell you something, I noticed something that when you look at our fans in the stadium, we got some of the most beautiful fans in the entire country.
Oh, yeah.
The people here are just beautiful. I mean, so you got to be envious if you come from Alabama, Nebraska, and you're seeing this, people with suntans and just beautiful people.
Yeah, well, when the people from Nebraska, when they see our women, like, they probably don't know what to do. Like, it's like, what am I looking at right now? Because they're used to a little heavier, a little more pale. Like, they're not used to what we got.
Yeah, when you go to look at these other states, everybody looks the same. But here, we're so diverse. And you got just such a culture of we're so cultural that it's beautiful. And I think it's just a kaleidoscope of just beauty everywhere.
I feel like I'm talking to the mayor right now. Did you just get elected, RW?
No, I love those big screens. So when I'm sitting at the game with other players, I'm looking, I'm saying, my God, if I'm somewhere in Toledo, Nebraska, Alabama, I'm thinking, if I'm a guy, I say, man, look at these fans. They're so beautiful. These people are just, the women, the men, everybody's beautiful. And I mean, come on. Next time, check it out if you think I'm wrong. But, I think we're going to have a great atmosphere. And I think the fans are just, Mark Richt's doing a tremendous job. He's not just building a program, but he's also building a certain type of culture down here. And he's unifying this community once again. Because when I go to the games, nobody's concerned about politics. We don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. It doesn't matter what gender you are. It becomes a love fest. You know what I'm saying? And we just...
You're so right. Like, I look back at my days, and I got to let you run, RW, because I want to get some more people in. I appreciate you. Because I look back at my days, as not only my days as a student at the university, but even before that, because I went to games for most of my life. When Miami scores a touchdown, I'm high-fiving, and if it's a really big moment, I'm hugging people I've never met before. But people that don't smell good, I'm hugging because I'm that excited about a touchdown. Like, I remember when Devin Hester returned a kickoff for a touchdown against the Florida Gator, and then when Miami made that big comeback in that same game. Like, I am embracing and hugging complete strangers because that's what sports does, man. I didn't care what their politics were, what these people were doing with their lives. I didn't care. We were united by the Canes. That's all that mattered. Ricky is in Fort Lauderdale. What's up, Ricky?
Hey, Dono.
What's up, man?
I got a question for you and a point, but my question is, how come it seems like everybody's okay with Notre Dame having this monster season after being 4-8, but yet they are kind of in shock and awe that we are where we are when we've got the nation's longest win?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question because, you know, this time a year ago, like you're alluding to, everybody wanted to fire Brian Kelly. He was on the hot seat. Notre Dame wasn't bowl eligible last year. I mean, obviously people hold Notre Dame to a standard where it's a big enough brand name of a program. It never surprises you when they're good, but why does it surprise people that Miami is now good? I don't understand that either.
And I think the thing for me is, like, I look and I'm like, I think there's that want, that the media wants Notre Dame to be good. I think I disagree with the idea that people don't want us to be good because we are a good villain. So, mm-hmm. You know, even when we're a good team and there's nobody you can complain about on this roster, we're still a good villain. You know, people want to see us and want to see us lose more than likely, but it's just weird to me that, you know, that was a bad Notre Dame team. I know we lost to them last year. That was a bad Notre Dame team. And magically now they've, you know, they've learned to win, and that's okay. But it's not okay that Miami learned to win by, you know, winning some close games here and there. But my question to you is, what do you think is more likely? If there was a blowout, which way do you see the blowout happening? Would it be UM blowing out Notre Dame? Or it'll be the other way around.
You know, I'll say this for the third time, I'm not expecting a blowout, but by your scenario, I think it would be a Miami blowout because of the home field advantage. And I know the crowd is going to be great, and it's going to be a tough environment for Notre Dame. So, I mean, I think if there is a blowout, it would be a Miami blowout.
And that's how I kind of feel. I've sat here and looked at this, and I really do think it's going to be a close game. But, you know, if all of a sudden it's a touchdown late to keep it to 14, you know, for Notre Dame and make it look a little more respectable, I wouldn't be shocked by that either. I just, at this point, I kind of feel like I'm like, this team has learned how to win. Last week was a huge game. And what better way to say, hey, you think we haven't played anybody than to beat the one team that everybody said you couldn't necessarily play with. And now if you do it again,
nope. I think Ricky fell into the void.
About.
You dropped there for a second, Ricky. Let me let you run. He's kind of in and out there with the phone line last week. But no, I don't have a good answer for that, because it is true that nobody seems surprised that Notre Dame is looking like a national powerhouse again, that they're back to number three after going 4-8 last year. Why is there so much disbelief, so much doubt, and so much surprise at Miami doing it? I don't understand that. I don't. I mean, maybe because Notre Dame has been good more recently. I mean, that is a team that 5 years ago played in a national title game only to get embarrassed by Alabama, but they got there. And for Miami, it's been a lot longer since they're in that national consciousness. But, yeah, people seem to still be in denial that Miami is actually good. You notice that, Tito?
Yeah, and I think it's just crazy because Clemson last year snuck by a lot of teams in similar fashion to that Miami's doing.
Yeah.
And there's this narrative that's been going around that people don't hate Miami, but you've seen the comments from Feinbaum, you've seen the comments from Neuheisel,
mm-hmm.
you've seen where the playoff is putting Miami. I just think that there's always some sort of hurdle that Miami has to go over.
Here's how you're going to know there's like a true, like a real bias. If Miami beats Notre Dame and then they're like number five next week, and not in the top four. I mean, I don't expect that to play out. I think if you beat Notre Dame, I think that you get into that top four. But if they don't, you're going to know there's something wrong there. You're going to know there's something wrong. Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel will join us. The Miami Heat took care of business last night, my friends. They took care of business against the Phoenix Suns. We'll hope they can do it again here on this road trip. iDubbbz will join us after this here on WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Ed Morse is your only Cadillac dealer of the year in Broward and Dade County. This is the Alex Dono Show on South Florida's sports leader, 25 years and counting. Miami Sports Radio, WQAM.
Back here on the Alex Dono Show, Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM. You know, we had a caller in the previous segment talk about how beautiful the women are that go to Hurricanes games, and now I've got my mom texting me videos. That I shouldn't have really segued from that to the other thing. My mom is texting me videos of how beautiful the campus is. She wanted me to remind you of that. Let's go out now to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Talk some Miami Heat basketball with Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Heat took care of business last night, is how I would describe it, the victory at the Phoenix Suns. Ira, how are you in Utah this evening?
You know, I just keep hopscotching around the country, not sure where I am anymore. I mean, what a crazy six-game trip. I was heading out to Denver just a week ago today. You didn't know where this is headed. And if it could just be, Alex, a survival trip for this Heat team to come back at 500, a game over, a game under, I think they'll have accomplished getting the worst out of the way, and then they can get back to trying to be who they are.
Yeah, Ira, for a couple of years, my sister lived in Salt Lake City, so I used to visit every now and then. I always stayed at the Shiloh Inn. Have you ever stayed at the Shiloh Inn? It's like right there with like a neon pink sign.
Yes, right down in the middle of the block between the Marriott and the other hotels.
Yes.
Here. I mean, this, you know, God bless them for their NBA team here, and they're the nicest people they can be, and it's a place I love because of the scenery. But this has as much of a small-town feel as probably any NBA city that I go to, even the small-town cities.
What is the most small, aside from Salt Lake City, like what's the next small-towniest city, like Oklahoma City?
I mean, Oklahoma City's ridiculous how you drive by the oil derricks and there's just nothing there. Sacramento, even though it's the state government seat, it's not really a place, and you just come through the fields between the airport and into downtown, another sort of small town feel place, and even Memphis. I mean, so many people talk about Memphis, but anyone's familiar with New Orleans and tries to compare that to Beale Street. Beale Street's like four blocks, the famous Beale Street. You've got to come here for the Blues. It's a much smaller place. That's the one thing the NBA has done well, is they found single market cities and they've sort of been able to thrive there. Hey, if we're talking about cow towns, I'll throw Orlando in there as well.
Ah, that's true. But listen, they got Disney, so it's not really a cow town. But Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joins us here on WQAM. Ira, it's nice seeing Hassan Whiteside bounce back the other night, last night after getting benched the previous game. But should we still be needing to bench Hassan to send messages at this point in his career?
No, it can't be that, you know, but I've reached a point with Hassan where at least I'm honest with myself, and people who have read the Ask Ira feature at sunsentinel.com, I think, can relate. Look, there are 82 games in the season. We know that Hassan can drift in and out. I give him 10 mulligans a season, 10 moments where I say to myself, where was Hassan? What was he thinking? What happened? So my thought view is this. The game in Oakland against the Warriors, that's one of his 10. Mm. As long as he limits it to 10 and doesn't take it too far, I think the Heat will be fine. Give the Heat 70 quality dominating big man performances, sort of like he did last night in Phoenix. That's all you can ask for. So I know it's easy to focus on the negative. I know it stands out when a guy is making $250,000 a game. But I think you just have to appreciate that's who Hassan is. That's who you signed at 4 years for $98 million, and you just work from there.
And also, I would figure, you know, upcoming going up against a guy like Rudy Gobert, there'd be no lack of motivation because I know the two of them have gone back and forth on social media before.
Yeah, and, you know, these next two are perfect because these next two also are guys that Hassan is compared against. You know, look, the game is changing. There are smaller centers. Once Draymond Green moved to center for the Warriors, there really wasn't a place for Hassan in that game. But the next two games, Rudy Gobert here in Salt Lake City in Utah on Friday night, and then Andre Drummond at 4 p.m. in Detroit on Sunday to end this trip, These are the players that Hassan's being compared to, the old-time big muscle post-playing big men. So this is when we'll see. Where does he stack up within his subset of centers? Is he the dominant player who there's no questions about, or is he just another sort of dinosaur big man that you sort of throw in the group of him and Drummond and Gobert and Gortat, who he's going to face the two games after Sunday as well? So now, Hassan, it's sort of like when you talk about MMA. He's in his weight class now for the next four games.
I like that. And Ira, coming out of the win in Phoenix, obviously that's a bad team. The Heat took care of business. But as far as simplifying the offense, cutting down on the turnovers, how much of that is progress, sustainable, or is that more just about beating up on a team that's not very good?
Well, it's the latter point. I mean, I spoke to a scout. I sat next to a scout at the game yesterday, and he said, look, Eric Spoelstra has been simplifying for a long time. And you know what? That's what you do when you only have one true point guard on your roster. I've always said this, and I always believe this. Point guard in the NBA, and I think on any level, is an innate skill. Either you have it or you're not. For all the converting Josh Richardson, who played some in college, or Tyler Johnson, either you're innately a point guard or you're not. So what they're doing is, yes, they have facilitators, they have playmakers, they have ball handlers, but Goran's the only point guard. So by simplifying it, dribble handoffs, pick and rolls, it makes it easier. And I do think, because of the depth of talent they have, because of the conditioning they're in, that if they have to run five dribble handoffs in a set or five straight pick and rolls or something, they can do that and always get to a better shot. We saw some of that. But to your main point there, Alex, this is who the Heat is. They darn well better win the games they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone looks at them going into Golden State and saying, well, that's a game they should win. Those are tough games. The game in Washington coming up a week from now, that's a tough game. That's why you have to get the ones that you're supposed to get against the second-tier teams like yourself.
Almost a month into the season, Ira, where do the Heat line up with your preseason expectation? Disappointment or right where you thought they'd be?
I thought they were going to be a 500 team most of the way, maybe till midseason, and then Spoelstra's teams, they've shown a way that over the second half of the season, they're better. I only predicted them to finish three games over 500. I think, you know, four games at 44 and 38. I think that's roughly who they are anyway. So I think you're going to see this. Just stay close to 500. That's why last night, that's why the Clippers game is so important. That's why tomorrow is so important, because if they win tomorrow and they get to 500, then even if they lose in Detroit, okay, at least they're going home in good shape. You don't want to get home and be three games under 500 and constantly, like last season, fighting that never-ending uphill battle. So I know it's crazy. It's an 82-game season. We are so early on. But you know what? We know what happened last year. And when it starts to snowball, it can really snowball.
Ira, all of a sudden, former players are piling on about like how miserable they were in 2014. Dwayne Wade made some comments about it last week, that it was like a failed marriage that final year of the Big Three. Ray Allen came out and basically said that, you know, Eric Spoelstra and the Heat front office didn't know how to manage a team with older players. Do hearing things like this now, does that change your perspective that you had covering that team? Did you see any of this stuff going on that year?
No, because I covered that team, I know that Eric Spoelstra canceled a boatload of practices during the second half of that season. There were a bunch of times at home games there weren't shoot-around, so I'm not buying that. What I would say is this. This is more the factor of the Heat does a lot of work with his fans. Players make a lot of appearances. It's in the collective bargain agreement that a player must make X amount of appearances a season. What those players were upset about is they also had their own individual marketing, and they wanted that to count toward their Heat requirement.
Uh-oh.
The Heat said, hey, we're a mid-market-sized team. Our fans relate. We find that the people who relate to the players at these events tend to be people who also buy season tickets and keep their tickets. So it sort of became a bit of infighting. Is like with LeBron or Ray or Dwayne would go, I have my own event to go to, and the Heat are going, that's fine, but you have to do ours as well. That's where the complaints and the exhaustion set in. And the Heat basically said, hey, this was collectively bargained that there would be whatever the number is, 8, 10, 12 appearances a season that every player is obliged to make. I think that's where the whole thing started, is these guys said, hey, we should be above that. But in this market, that's what they needed. They needed the outreach with fans. I think that's where it started. And my number two point would be this. LeBron James, I believe, was angling for an out that entire season, sort of like this season now in Cleveland. So I think what happened was he started to tell people how this isn't the greatest place and the Heat culture isn't the greatest thing, because it's very curious. LeBron leaves Miami. Mike Miller goes with him. James Jones goes with him. Chris Birdman Anderson goes with him. And there was, if you remember, talk of Ray Allen going with him.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So I think there was, I don't want to say some anti-organizational disinformation, but I just think it was a case of LeBron may not have sort of had the full Heat commitment also. So if you're questioning Eric Spoelstra or questioning Pat Riley about their commitment to the right thing, I think you have to sort of look in the mirror as well.
Does it sound like sour grapes when you hear this? I mean, I know Ray Allen's trying to sell a book. I'm not exactly sure why Dwayne said what he said, but does it sound like sour grapes?
I don't know if it's sour grapes. It sounds like the frustration of all those players were there to win a championship. There was zero margin of error. And Alex, let's go back to those 2014 NBA Finals. If the air conditioning worked in Game 1,
right,
the entire NBA might have been different for the past three seasons.
Oh, wow.
LeBron doesn't leave. Dwayne doesn't leave. Who knows what happens with Chris Bosh, even with his illness, and how they could fill that in anyway. So I think that has more to do with it, the frustration of the moment. But I think more than over-practicing players, too many commitments and public things, it's the fact that they've had really crappy air conditioning at the AT&T Center.
What do you eat in Utah? Is there a favorite there? Because I actually, when I used to go there, I thought there were some half-decent Italian delis there.
And you know what? And some of my friends here say it's a very transient population. There's actually some very good Mexican of all
Ooh,
things.
Ooh, okay.
And I've been
like
told
that
when friends come here also, we sometimes go out locally produced Mexican, not the chain restaurant kind of stuff. And there is something to be said for that here also. So you know what? I wouldn't call it one of the great food cities of America,
right,
but I would also call it a place where you can go and get sort of a hearty local meal.
I like that. Ira, enjoy your time there, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. You know, we'll just keep going, and I'll keep complaining about the 2014 season also, I guess. It's what we do. Thank you, Alex.
I want to hear Ira's tell-all on that. That's great. I want to hear Ira talk about how there was a failed marriage in the media room. Nobody got along. It was infighting in the back, the press conferences. Everybody was at each other's throat. You know, like Ira couldn't get along with Tim Reynolds. There was battle royales. You know, Tom DeAngelo was having a problem. I want to hear that story. I want to hear that tell all. We'll talk to a guy in the media who I think gets along with just about everybody, Matt Porter from the Palm Beach Post. He's going to join us next. Get you ready for Miami Notre Dame coming up. Matt Porter will join us. Talk about the U here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
My excitement for Miami versus Notre Dame. Number 7 versus number 3. It is game day week, and Matt Porter joins us now from the Palm Beach Post. He joins us on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved 2 blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Matt, has it set in for you that you are now 2 days away from covering one of the biggest games of the season in college football?
Yeah, it's fun, man. It's been a fun couple of weeks, you know, after Miami, you know, handling its business against Virginia Tech and, you know, getting one step closer, you know, within a hair of the ACC title game. You know, now I know that I'm you know, going to be covering that in December, you know, all but certain. And, you know, with this game against Notre Dame, I mean, all but being for a playoff spot, it's definitely fun. These are the weeks that you really live for as a beat reporter.
And big picture, Matt, how big is it for the university to have ESPN College Game Day? They've not been to South Florida in a decade. They've never gone on campus to Coral Gables, so that's happening for the first time. How big is that for the university and for the program?
Yeah, it's huge, because think about it. I mean, you know, there's so many college football schools that are just, you know, big name schools that get these game day games. I mean, think about, you know, if you're sitting in Hollywood or wherever you are, you know, or just anywhere in South Florida. I mean, think about how many times you've seen Oklahoma State's campus, you know, right. Or Oregon's campus, or you know, even like a Stanford's campus. But if you live over there, if you live in Palo Alto, you know, you probably have never seen the U. You know, you've probably never seen the campus and, you know, seen any of the flyover shots of you know, what the campus looks like or anything like that. Everybody watches College Game Day. It is the way a lot of college football fans start their Saturday mornings. And for this to essentially be like a three-hour infomercial for the University of Miami, you know, they're going to have shots at downtown and the beaches and all that stuff. You know, and to say, you know, to say nothing about the actual game itself. I mean, the atmosphere at Hard Rock Stadium is going to be electric. We know that. You know, just for that to be showcased again on ABC for the second week in a row. I mean, this is a huge opportunity for Miami to show what it has, and you know, really open some eyes, because it's not even about this year's recruiting class. This year's recruiting class is basically already locked in. I mean, there's a few players that they're looking at, but think about the 2019 and 2020 and 2021 kids that are just now starting to, you know, wake up to what schools they might be looking at. You know, I can imagine there's probably a few kids in Michigan or wherever that are going to look at this on Saturday morning, see the 80-degree skies and the palm trees and the fountain in the back of the, you know, back of the, you know, in the lake there and in the backdrop of the College Game Day shot, and think, okay, man, maybe I might want to go down there and see what that's all about down there at Coral Gables.
And speaking there on what you're saying, that ties into a story that you wrote today where you asked the question, is this the biggest recruiting weekend of the Mark Richt era? The answer, obviously, it has to be yes so far, right, Matt?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And really, that was just kind of a, you know, I don't want to overhype it too much. I mean, I think it's really one of the best, got to be one of the biggest recruiting weekends in, you know, the last decade. I don't know. I mean, you know, how far back do you want to go?
Right.
It's just it's a program with a ton of momentum right now. And you know, Mark Richt has talked about this, you know, about getting it going and you know, what that means. I mean, what it means is, you know, when you're winning, when the fans are believing, the recruits start to believe, and then just all kind of works. You know, it kind of everything feeds into the other aspect of it. You know, the recruits keep showing up and the fans keep showing up. And, you know, I'm going to be interested to see, not to look too far ahead, but, I mean, I'm going to be interested to see what the fan base is like, what the crowd is like for the noon game against Virginia. You know, is that, are we still going to get the same electric atmosphere? Well, I don't know. Maybe not, just because it's not a Saturday night game where everybody's, you know, had a chance to party all night. But I would expect that there's still going to be a big, a pretty decent sized crowd, you know, even though, you know, that Virginia is not the sexiest opponent. But, you know, I think people are believing in this team. And, I mean, if they do something special on Saturday night, you know, all the more reason to get behind the team.
And, Matt, Notre Dame is a great opponent, an elite opponent. They're ranked four spots in front of Miami. They're a favorite in the game. But based on what we saw at Hard Rock Stadium last week, I mean, not only with how well the team and the defense played, but how strong that crowd showed up last week for a night game. And I expect it to be even stronger this week for a bigger night game. I mean, how much of an advantage, like how many points is that home field advantage now at Hard Rock Stadium potentially worth?
Yeah, it could be a couple. I mean, it could be a field goal or a touchdown, which is, you know, all Notre Dame's favorite by is a field goal at this point. You know, never in my time here have I really, you know, and I've been on the season 2013. So, you know, I was there for the Florida game, and that was, you know, that was big. But, you know, those Florida games, those Florida State games, I mean, those are usually split crowds, honestly. I mean, yeah. Or something at least close to it. Maybe it's 60-40. But, you know, these crowds that we've seen in the last two games, and I know Notre Dame's traveled well. Notre Dame's going to bring some fans, but this is going to be an electric atmosphere, and it's going to be pro-UM. And, you know, the way that the stadium has been renovated, the way that it traps sound, I mean, we're seeing a home field advantage like I've never seen. And, you know, of course, everybody knows, you know, Fall State, and I wasn't around here for the days of the Orange Bowl, and everybody tells me how loud that place got, and I've seen it on TV and, you know, old videos and stuff like that. You know, this is something that this program hasn't experienced in quite some time, and you know, it's truly special, because other places, you know, Tuscaloosa, Tallahassee, wherever, go, you know, across the country where, you know, the biggest show in town is the college football team. That's not necessarily the case here in Miami, but Miami's building it to be one of the events that Miami fans show up to, you know, that they show up for. And that is truly special. And I think we're definitely going to see it again on Saturday night.
Matt Porter, who covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post, joins us here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. You know, Matt, on the field, a matchup that everyone will look to is Miami's defensive front against Notre Dame's O-line and Notre Dame's running game. First in the country in yards per carry, a top three rushing team in the country. How do you see Miami's big guys up front on the D-line matching up with, you know, a couple of Notre Dame players, the left guard and the left tackle? They'll be playing on Sundays next year.
Yeah, I think he's going to have, Miami defensive front. I mean, there's plenty of NFL prospects on that Miami line, too, on the defensive line. And, you know, from the senior classes to the, you know, juniors, sophomores, and freshmen, I mean, there's some dudes for sure, as we've seen. I think it's really everybody because, you know, one of the things that Josh Adams does so well is just break out a 60-yard run. He showed it last year in South Bend against Miami, and he showed it against a lot of teams this year. So, you know, getting him on the ground is obviously critical. And, you know, that means that you're going to have guys like Jaquan Johnson who are going to have to make solid tackles like they have been this year. But Miami, you know, the defense has improved a lot. I mean, I've seen, this year, you know, they've come along. You know, they're a little bit worried about the secondary in September, but they've really improved, and credit to Miami's coaching staff there. And, of course, you know, the players themselves are, you know, kind of just coming along strong. I think, you know, you saw – I think back to, Georgia Tech. I mean, Michael Jackson made a huge improvement in that game.
Yeah. So
he realized that he could handle, you know, what Georgia Tech was throwing at him with that option offense, and he became a dominant player, and he's been playing excellent ever since. You're seeing guys like Trajan Bandy and Derek Smith play the nickel now. Miami has confidence that it can play that if it needs to, so that's huge. But really, you know, the linebackers, they've been pretty good this year, and the defensive front has as well, so... Yeah, I think it's going to be just, your best against my best, and we'll see what happens.
Matt, you know, on the offensive side of the football, you did have three interceptions last week from Malik Rozier, so the stat line didn't look great for him. I thought Mark Richt, though, did a pretty good job explaining why each of those interceptions happened. And, you know, he affects the game in so many ways with the way he runs the football. Like, I couldn't come away with last week saying that was a bad game because he was so important to what Miami was able to do in winning that game. What are your thoughts on where Rozier and that offense are at this moment?
Yeah, I think anybody who's looking at those interceptions is kind of missing the point. I mean, really, you know, that game, and you're right. I mean, Rick spoke to it right after the game, and I think he's right. It was a game of shots. I mean, they knew that they were going to take their shots, and you know, yeah, Rozier threw some picks, and one of them was a tip ball. And, you know, I'm not going to make excuses. I mean, you know, those were, you know, there a couple of them were not his best. But, you know, at the same time, you know, they were going to be aggressive. They wanted to, you know, make sure that they were going to take their shots. But also, I mean, what that does for Rozier, you know, he doesn't worry about it because he knows he has the defense. And that opens up a lot. I mean, if you're out there playing scared and you're not taking those shots because you're worried about your defense, you know, not being able to get the ball back, then, you know, that changes the way that you call plays on offense and play on offense. So I think it's important, you know, that Rozier knows that he has that confidence. He feels that confidence clearly. That's just kind of who he is that we've seen. You know, he's going to make his mistakes, but he's going to bounce back from him. He's not going to dwell on him. And it's a pretty important quarterback trait for a starting quarterback to have. And certainly when you have the defense, you know, that makes you all the more dangerous.
Certainly not the first time I've asked you this question this year, but could this be the week that Amon Richards really breaks out? I know it's been a frustrating one for him, Matt, with all the injury issues.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he says he's healthy, you know, but it kind of was like when we talked to Stacey Coley when he was a sophomore in 2014, you know, he's fighting. You know, he's fighting it right now. He expected the hamstring to be an issue for him all year long, and it has been. And he also had a little ankle injury that, you know, he's been working through. So, you know, for a guy who relies on his legs so much, I mean, that's obviously tough. But the good news for Miami is, well, two good things. I mean, one, if they forget about him, you know, then that's probably not good. I'm talking about Notre Dame. If, you know, they forget about Amon Richards, that's going to be to their detriment because, you know, he made a couple plays in that last game. He hasn't had the 100-yard breakout game where he hasn't, you know, put together, you know, he hasn't thrown a 70-yard you know, touchdown catch, you know, at the other team. But, you know, they have enough weapons in the passing game, I think. And I think we're seeing, you know, one of the best tight ends in the country in Chris Herndon do his thing every single week. You know, what he was able to do last week with that, you know, that run up the sideline, the touchdown Braxton Berrios has been an absolute warrior for the team. I mean, he's been outstanding, just making so many clutch plays. And you know, then you get guys like Jeff Thomas and DJ Dallas in there, you know, in the mix. I mean, that's been big. You know, it really, if you told me before the season, hey, Amon Richards is not going to do much of anything, and oh, by the way, Mark Walton's not going to be there either, I would have been pretty darn worried about Miami's offense, especially, you know, with a first-year starting quarterback. But, hey, man, they scored 24 points in every single game, and that's a lot more than I don't know how many teams have done that, but not a lot of teams have done that. You know, they haven't had the big blowout performances, but overall, you know, for the offense, for in context, I think they've done pretty well.
You know, I've heard and read some pretty amazing quotes this week from Braxton Berrios and from a guy like Casey McDermott, a couple of the upperclassmen leaders of this team, about Miami versus Notre Dame and the rivalry. So do you feel like they speak for most of that locker room, that these guys do understand and appreciate the history between these teams?
Yeah, I think they do, but you know, there's so much that's present for this team right now. You know, I mean, if you want to talk history, talk about last year. I mean, the last team to beat Miami was Notre Dame, you know, in South Bend, 13 games ago. You know, Miami's going to be going for its 14th straight win. You know, this is the here and now. I mean, really, you know, fans can get fired up about Catholics versus convicts, or however you want to say it, you know, whatever term you want to use, or, you know, you can get fired up about games that happened in the 80s. Those were great games. You know, they're part of this, certainly. You know, for the general, you know, fan across the country, it's a reason to watch this game, you know, to kind of like see where these programs are at now. But I mean, for this team, I mean, yeah, they appreciate it because that's why part of the reason why they come to the U is the tradition. But I mean, there's just so much on the table for this team right now. They've come so far. They just keep winning. And that's the most important thing for them right now.
Yeah, and there's college football playoff implications as Miami is at number 7. They can potentially get into that, one of those coveted top 4 spots with a win over Notre Dame. And you mentioned at the top, it's essentially a college football playoff eliminator this weekend. So with all that said, Matt, do you have a prediction? How do you expect this game to play out? Can you give me a winner?
Well, I'm going to do my prediction tomorrow.
Okay.
Every Friday I write a column and I do a matchups box, you know, as to who I think has the edge, and then I give a prediction at the end.
See, so I had you on a day too early. I knew I would screw this up.
Yeah. Well, no, if we're talking score, not quite sure yet. I don't know if I want to go on the record with it, but I do think Miami's going to win.
Ooh, all right. I'll take it.
I think that the crowd, I think it's a special, you know, if it was on the road, it'd be a different story. But what I've seen from the crowd, what I've seen, you know, Hard Rock Stadium this season, when it's going, it is an advantage, you know, like up there with some of the best in college football. And I really think that matters. You know, this team, they believe, not cliche, it's hard to quantify, but they believe in each other. They really do. They believe that they can get this done. They believe that, you know, no matter what happens in the game, they're going to be okay. They're going to find a way. And until proven otherwise, you know, they're going to keep believing. And I think even if they lose this game, they'll continue to believe that they can, you know, go win the ACC championship. So that's a pretty special thing. And I think it's going to be a pretty special night in South Florida on Saturday.
I love that. I didn't even need a score. All I wanted you to say was Miami. And that's all that I needed, Matt. That's exactly what I got. And people can follow this man on Twitter at Matty Ports and check out his work in the Palm Beach Post, palmbeachpost.com. He's been all over it this week, and I'm sure there's more great stuff to come, including the prediction piece tomorrow from Miami and Notre Dame. Matt, thank you so much for the time.
All right, Alex. Thanks, man.
Coming up next, Casey Jones, my pregame partner, is going to join me. I think I also want to take the call from Gordon, because apparently Gordon doesn't think we should have had Matt Porter on, because what can Matt Porter add to the conversation? I don't know if Gordon's right. We'll talk to Gordo. We'll talk to Casey next year on WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.